Welcome to another deep dive. This time, we're going exploring the world of Nichiren Buddhism. You've sent us some fascinating material on the training of priests.
Yeah, looks like you're interested in how their prayer practice called Kajikido can actually help the person on the receiving end.
Exactly. I want to understand what it's like to receive that kind of spiritual support.
Okay. Sounds like a great deep dive.
But before we get into all that, maybe we could start with the basics. What exactly is Kajikido?
Well, in Nichiren Buddhism, Kajikido basically translates to ritual prayer. And it's kind of a mix of different things.
Like what?
Like ancient Indian esoteric Buddhism, or what's called Mikyo in Japanese.
Interesting.
It also includes some Shinto influences and Nichiren's own interpretations of the Lotus Sutra.
So it's not just like your typical meditation or like a general prayer for well-being.
Not exactly. It's seen more as a way to tap into spiritual power, you know, for very specific practical purposes.
Huh. So it's about getting some kind of concrete outcome.
Yeah. Think healing, protection, even rainmaking.
Rainmaking. Okay, now that's something I need to hear more about.
We'll get there. But to really get what makes Nichiren's approach special, we got to go back to its roots.
You mean way back to India and China?
Exactly. Early Mikyo wasn't actually about what it could do for you.
Oh, so it wasn't about individual benefits.
Not really. It was all about reaching enlightenment, you know, through complex rituals, mandalas, and mantras.
Makes sense.
But as Mikyo spread, it started to adapt to all the local cultures, and the focus shifted more toward fulfilling people's wants and needs here in this world.
Ah, so it became more practical, more about everyday problems.
Exactly. And that's the Mikyo that eventually made it to Japan.
So how did it get to Japan?
Well, Mikyo came over in the 8th and 9th centuries. And it's thanks to these two important figures, Kukai, who founded Shingon Buddhism, and Saicho, who founded Tendai Buddhism. They both studied in China and came back with these esoteric teachings.
I bet that was a pretty big deal back then.
Oh, yeah. They actually had a bit of a rivalry going on, too, because of their different views on Mikyo.
Interesting. So do you think those early Mikyo practitioners in Japan actually prayed for other people? Or was it more like a solo thing?
Oh, they definitely prayed for others. We can see how Kajikido had a real impact on people back then. But then Nichiren comes along in the 13th century.
And Nichiren kind of changed things up, right?
Yeah, Nichiren, he was a very complex figure, a bit controversial too.
Oh, how so?
Well, he only accepted the Lotus Sutra as the true path to enlightenment.
Okay.
And at first, he really didn't like Mikyo.
Interesting. So he completely rejected it.
Well, as he developed his own teachings, he started to see Mikyo as a tool.
A tool for what?
For showing just how effective the Lotus Sutra really is, and a way to actually help people who were struggling.
Okay, so he wasn't totally against it. He just wanted to make sure it fit with his understanding of Buddhism.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And he went about it in some pretty unique ways.
So what did he actually do?
Well, he created his own mandalas, brought in deities from Buddhism and Shinto, and even picked out specific parts of the Lotus Sutra just to use in Kajikido.
So he really put his own spin on it, huh? Did he actually use these prayers on people, or was it more theoretical for him?
No, Nichiren definitely walked the walk. There's proof that he performed Kajikido for all kinds of reasons, healing, protection, whatever people needed.
That's fascinating. What would it have been like to be one of the people Nichiren actually prayed for?
Well, imagine you're Ito Hachiro Zaimon Tsukemitsu.
What's that?
A regent in Izu. He was really sick and turned to Nichiren for help.
So Nichiren must have been pretty famous, even back then.
Oh yeah, he was well known. But get this, Nichiren actually refused to pray for Ito at first.
Why would he do that?
Because Ito wasn't a Lotus Sutra follower.
Oh wow.
But Ito, he wouldn't give up. He kept asking. Finally, Nichiren agreed and performed the Kajikido. He called upon all these protective deities, and guess what?
Ito got better.
Yep, he recovered.
That's amazing. It must have been quite an experience for Ito to actually see that Nichiren's prayer works.
Oh, absolutely. And to thank Nichiren, Ito gave him a gift. It was a statue of Buddha. And you know what? Nichiren kept that statue with him for the rest of his life.
Really? That's incredible.
Yeah, he even considered it to be his personal Hanzan. You know, his own sacred object of devotion.
So it wasn't just a one-sided thing.
Mm-hmm.
There was real gratitude there.
Yeah.
A connection. I bet that kind of practice must have been emotionally powerful for everyone involved.
Definitely. And there are other stories like this in Nichiren's life.
Really? Like what?
Well, there's a story about Nichiren's own mother. She was on her deathbed.
Oh, no.
And Nichiren, he prayed for her. And according to what people say, she actually came back to life.
Wow.
And then she lived for another 4 years.
That's incredible. It sounds like Nichiren really poured his heart into this Kaji Kido practice. What happened to it after he died? Did it just disappear?
Not at all. It actually kept going, but in two different directions. They're called the Minobu San method and the Nakayama method.
So two branches.
Yeah, and they both come from Nichiren's teachings, but they each have their own special rituals and ways of doing things, like the Nakayama branch, for example. They came up with this really interesting practice called Aragyo.
Oragyo. Okay, I gotta know more about that.
Well, imagine you're a priest,
Okay.
and you're about to start this intense 100-day training.
100 days.
Yep, we're talking hours of chanting, a super strict diet, and they even do these ritual purifications with cold water multiple times a day.
Wow, that's intense.
And during this whole time, they're completely cut off from the outside world.
So what's the point of all that?
Yeah.
Especially for the people who aren't priests going through this crazy training.
Yeah.
How does it benefit them?
It's all about the priest purifying themselves and building up spiritual energy, you know, kind of like earning spiritual merit, and then they can use all that to help others when they do Kaji Dito. They basically become this channel for all this powerful energy.
That's a huge responsibility.
Yeah.
It really shows how dedicated they are to helping others. Besides all the spiritual training, did the rituals and tools used for Kaji Kido change over time?
Yeah, it's pretty cool how it evolved. At first, Nichiren mainly used mandalas and chanting,
Right.
but later on, they started using something called a boken.
A boken, what's that?
It's a wooden sword.
A wooden sword. I wasn't expecting that.
They use it in a practice called Boken Kaji.
So what do they do with it?
It's like a symbolic way to cut through bad energy and get rid of evil spirits.
Oh, wow. So it's for protection.
Yeah. The priest does these special movements with the sword while chanting, almost like writing in the air. And eventually, they added Buddhist prayer beads called Juzu to the mix.
So they combine protection and prayer together.
Exactly. It's a really powerful combination.
It's amazing how this ancient practice has been able to adapt and find new ways to express itself.
Yeah, it really is. And that's one of the things that makes Kaji Kido so interesting. You know, how it's been able to change and survive for centuries shows how powerful and flexible it is.
Okay, so we've covered how Kaji Kido has changed over time, from its beginnings in India and China, all the way to how it's practiced in Nichiren Buddhism today.
It's definitely got a long and interesting history.
For sure. But what does it all mean for someone today? Like, if someone's looking for help through Kaji Kido, what can they expect?
That's the big question, right? I think it's about realizing the power of that spiritual energy. It's not just about the rituals themselves, but the thought behind it, how dedicated the priest is, and that connection to something much bigger than yourself.
Makes you wonder what's going through someone's head when they're getting this kind of prayer. Do they even know about all the history and symbolism behind it?
Maybe some do, but I don't think it really matters. What's important is that they believe that they're open to getting that spiritual support. Just like Itto Hachirozemon. Remember, he wasn't even a Lotus Sutra follower at first, but he still felt the effects of Nichiren's prayer.
That's true. Seems like the priest has a pretty important job here, kind of like a bridge between the person and those spiritual forces.
Absolutely. And that's why the training is so tough. It's not just memorizing rituals, it's about building that inner strength to be that connection.
So, like, if we could see what's happening when a priest is doing Kaji Kido, what would it be like from their side?
They're using everything they've learned, all that spiritual strength from years of practice, even that tough Aragyo training we talked about. They're chanting, visualizing, focusing all their energy on the person they're praying for and what they need.
So it's more than just reciting words. It's like sending out a certain kind of energy.
Yeah, exactly. They're calling on those deities, those protectors, and aiming that energy to get a specific result.
That's pretty powerful stuff. What about someone going through a tough time, like a sickness, losing someone, a big life change? What could a Kaji Kido prayer offer them at a time like that?
I think at its core, it can give them hope, a feeling that they're not alone, that there's something out there fighting for them, even if they can't see it.
So, like a spiritual safety net, a reminder that they're part of something bigger.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And for some people, that can give them a lot of strength, help them keep going, face those challenges with a new kind of
But
energy.
we got to be realistic, right? It's not about guaranteeing a good outcome.
Definitely not. It's not a magic solution. Even Nichiren said that it all depends on the person's faith and how open they are to it.
So it's more about setting things up so healing or positive change can happen, not forcing a specific result.
That's it. It's a team effort. The person, the priest, and these spiritual energies all working together.
Brings us back to those deities in the Chirinkaji Kido. We mentioned Hariti, the Ten Rakshasas, and Mahakala before. I'd love to dig deeper into what they do and what it means for the person getting the prayer when they're called upon. Feels like there's a whole other level to this practice we haven't even touched yet.
Absolutely, and that's a perfect topic for our next deep dive.
Looking forward to it. Okay, so let's talk about those deities. Hariti, the Ten Rakshasas, and Mahakala. They sound like a pretty powerful group.
Yeah, they each bring something unique to Kaji Kido. It's like another layer to the practice for the person getting the prayer.
Let's start with Hariti. I gotta say, this whole idea of a demoness who steals kids, turning into a protective mother goddess, it's pretty wild.
It really shows you how Buddhism can transform even the scariest figures into forces of good. Like even those focused on protection and compassion, Hariti's story is a perfect example of that.
So how does she go from stealing children to protecting them?
The story goes that Hariti had a ton of kids, like hundreds.
Wow.
But she'd steal other people's children to feed her own. Yeah, it's a pretty dark story. But the Buddha saw her deep love for her children and the suffering she was causing. So he decided to teach her a lesson.
What did he do?
He hid her youngest child.
Oh, that's rough.
It caused Hariti so much pain and grief. It made her really understand what she was doing to others.
I bet that was a huge wake-up call for her.
It was. She realized how much pain she'd caused other mothers, and she felt awful about it. She begged the Buddha to give her child back.
Did he?
Yeah, but he also used it as a chance to teach her about compassion and not harming others. And Hariti, she vowed to protect all children from then on.
That's a pretty amazing turnaround. So when they call on Hariti in Kaji Kido, how does it help the person who's getting the prayer? Especially if they're a parent, I mean.
Think about it. You're a parent and your child is sick or in danger. You're terrified. When the priest calls on Hariti, it's like tapping into that fierce motherly love, that need to protect.
So it's like having someone incredibly strong on your side who really understands what it's like to be a parent and wants to keep your child safe.
Exactly. And that feeling of comfort and hope can be really powerful for a parent going through a tough time.
Like having a guardian angel watching over their child.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got Hariti, the ultimate protector of children. Now, what about those 10 Rakshasas? They sound a bit more, I don't know, intimidating.
They definitely have a tougher sounding name. But like Hariti, they're ultimately about protection. In the Lotus Sutra, they vow to protect anyone who follows its teachings.
So if you're a Nichiren Buddhist and they call on those 10 Rakshasas for you, it's like having a whole spiritual security team.
Huh. Yeah, you could say that. They represent this constant, unwavering support, always there to protect you from harm. It's like a reminder that you're not alone in your struggles.
That's really comforting, especially when life throws you curveballs, like knowing you've got backup ready to jump in.
That's the idea. And that brings us to Mahakala. He's interesting because in some types of Buddhism, he's seen as this wrathful, destructive force, but not so much in Nichiren Buddhism.
So how do Nichiren Buddhists view Mahakala, especially when it comes to Kaji Kido?
For them, he's more about overcoming challenges and creating positive change. He might look fierce, but it's about clearing out negativity and making space for good things to happen.
So less about destruction and more about clearing a path.
Exactly. Imagine him as a warrior clearing those obstacles that are holding you back internally and externally, helping you face those challenges and come out stronger.
It's like having a spiritual coach who pushes you to be your best. So when someone's receiving Kaji Kido and they know these deities are being invoked, what might they feel?
It's different for everyone, of course. But I think it could feel like a surge of energy supporting them or a feeling of protection. It's like knowing there's something bigger than themselves working to help them.
It's like this mix of comfort, hope, and a boost of energy all rolled into one. This whole deep dive has really opened my eyes to what Kaji Kido is all about. It's amazing how these old traditions are still so relevant today, offering this unique kind of spiritual help.
It really shows how much we all need connection and meaning, and how much we need to feel like we're not alone in the tough times. Kaji Kido, with its history and all its different practices, gives us a way to find those things.
I couldn't agree more. Thanks so much for sharing your knowledge with us today. It's been a fascinating journey.
It was my pleasure.